Oh, that's my Prime delivery.
What, already?
Only one thing can match the buzz of Prime's fast delivery, and that's the buzz of Prime's entertainment.
What are we watching?
Heads of State, that new action comedy with Idris Elba as the Prime Minister, John Cena as the President, and Priyanka Chopra Jonas as their only hope. Looks like a blast.
From fast delivery to explosive entertainment, it's on Prime. For only $8.99 a month, join now. Content includes limited ads, subscription auto-renews. For more information, go to amazon.co.uk/prime.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify's made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
Met fans, and welcome back to another edition of the Terry Collins Show, presented by Tunnel of Towers, supporting America's greatest heroes. Donate just $11 per month by going to t2t.org. That's T, the number 2t.org. I'm John Arezzi. The Mets celebrated David Wright this past weekend. It was perhaps the most heartwarming Hall of Fame induction and number retirement could be in franchise history. The only one I can compare it to is when Tom Seaver had his number retired and was inducted in the Mets Hall of Fame back in 1988. Today, we're going to share some of the video content that we shot at the event. Of course, Terry Collins was a big part of that. So I think you'll all enjoy that today on this episode. It really captured so much of that special day for David Wright. And we're also going to be joined shortly right here with Mets beat writer for Newsday and analyst for SNY's Baseball Night in New York, Laura Albanese. And she'll be with us to get her insider take on the ceremony, as well as her views on the Mets and the upcoming trade deadline on today's leadoff. Also later in the show, TC and Andy Martino reminisce about the month of July in 2015. As well. So it's a good one today. And we will also have and debut another great story from the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. This week, we're going to feature the founder, Frank Siller, with iconic actor Sylvester Stallone. But let's get right to that leadoff. And we welcome back to the Terry Collins Show, Newsday Mets beat writer, SNY's Baseball Night in New York analyst, Laura Albanese. Laura, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me, John.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been an exciting several days in Mets land, and this past weekend was off the chart, and that's where I want to begin today with you. It's with David Wright and the ceremony, how incredible that induction was. And for you, someone who's covered the team now really for about 10 years, how did this compare to any other previous ceremony that you might have witnessed over that time?
I really do feel like it was in a league of its own. I mean, just the amount of emotion in that stadium at that moment was it's hard to really encapsulate. I remember taking a walk around the concourse, and the thing that stuck out to me the most is all these people wearing their faded David Wright jerseys. And you can tell that they've just had them for however many years, but they didn't go to Goodwill. You know, you can't throw out a David Wright jersey. And it just shows the devotion that this fandom had to this player. But I think, you know, David made a big point of showing the devotion that he had to the fandom. He kept talking about how, you know, he feels like the Mets are a blue-collar fan base, and he felt like a blue-collar player because while he was talented, he did not coast on talent alone. He was a really hard worker. And that moment where he stepped out into the field and stepped on third base and saluted everyone, you know, we talk a lot about David Wright's last game back in 2018, how everybody just wanted him to have that moment, and it really didn't happen. when he popped out in foul territory to essentially end his career. And he finally got the ending that I think this franchise and this fandom wanted for him. He really got he got the kudos, he got the adoration that he's probably earned through many, many years of just not only being a good player, but to us in the media, a fantastic person.
Yeah. I really, the love that was shared, and it wasn't just the day of the ceremony, it was all the events leading up to it. And, you know, the shows he did with Jose Reyes and Terry Collins and everything that he did. And one thing that always stood out to me about David is his being very humble and being very appreciative. It was amazing to see, and the love was just there throughout this entire ceremony. And he brought back guys that were close to him, like the Cliff Floyds and the Joe McEwings and the Michael Kadires. And my nephew and asked, well, you know, why isn't there a bunch of other guys? I said, these are the guys that were special to him. And did you notice that it seemed to be a total love fest with even the invitees that were at this thing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was one thing I had written a column about it, is that when you talk about the captain, the idea of the captaincy is that, you know, where he goes, people follow. And the fact that so many years later, you know, his old teammates almost still think about him as the captain, the fact that they packed out that press conference room. And that was just a smattering of the people that he had there. I mean, if you look on Instagram, if you look on various social media accounts, you'll see there's so many players that weren't even mentioned had shown up. There were photos of him in his suite with all these guys from you know, those mid 2010 teams. And there was this moment where it genuinely looked like Jose Reyes was keeping his sunglasses on so no one could see him cry.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is the sort of devotion that he really inspired in people. And he said he doesn't like being the center of attention, but, you know, people put him at the center because he was the type of player that not only led by, you know, vocally, but he led by his actions.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I mean, in your Sunday column in Newsday, you write A Captain for All Seasons. You wrote about the Mets losing the World Series to Kansas City. And the thing that struck me about that column was right from paragraph one, where, of course, there was a depressing end of the franchise and the fan base. And you were just beginning. That was your first year covering the team. And you wrote about in the article that he issued an edict in the clubhouse that stayed with you to this day. And you wrote about it. And it was so cool. Describe that moment for our viewers and our listeners, and what that event was at the end of that World Series, and what impression it made not only on you as a young reporter, but for all those who might have witnessed it as well.
I mean, it made such a huge impression to the point where, like, I feel like I can still remember it very, very accurately, like it was yesterday. Obviously, before I wrote my column, I looked at video of it, but I was like, wow, this is exactly what I remember. The game had ended. Obviously, it was a pretty heartbreaking loss for the Mets. You go into the clubhouse, and people are dejected. They're slumped over. They're still wearing their uniforms. They don't want this season to end. And you think about David Wright, and at that point, you know, 2015, he had already started having back problems. So maybe in the back of his mind, he already knew that this could be his last shot at a World Series. And yet he put that aside and he went around and he thanked his teammates. He even thanked members of the media. And then I remember the edict that you were talking about. It's like, it's time to go outside. And he went and everyone, we followed. We're like, what's going on? Because at this point, after the game ends, there's post-game press conferences. It had been a good bit of time since the game had ended, probably more than an hour or close to it. But he knew. He knew that if he went out there, there were going to be fans that were still there, that still wanted to be part of this. Excuse me, pardon me. That still wanted to be part of this. And so he went out and they just thanked the fans. And the fans started chanting, "Thank you, Mets." So kind of walking out into the field in that moment. And you know, like, if you do look at the videos, there's like a video or two on YouTube that some of the reporters shot. The guys are obviously, they're not happy. They just lost a World Series. But they're still doing it. You know, they're still thanking the fans. They're still waving to them. And it was just a moment of, you know, when you talk about a captain for all seasons, the headline to that article, you know, captains are great when things are going well. Certainly you want a captain to lead you all the way to a championship. But captains are really made, they're crafted when things are going poorly. because that's when it's hard to follow someone, and still they followed him.
Yeah, it was really a great piece once again. So I invite everybody to check it out. I mean, it's online, of course, you could find it, but it was a great tribute to David. And when you look at all the numbers that have been now retired by the Mets, and of course, Steve Cohen has taken an initiative of not only David, of course, but Doc and Daryl and the others and Kuzman, who's up there. But when you look at like who's next, when people say who's next, to me personally, I can't really nobody comes to mind as far as who could be next on those rafters. Do you feel the same, or do you kind of think like who could be next in this this tribute? But I don't think anyone could capture what David did really with this special
presentation. Yeah, I don't know that anyone right now could. I could see a future where if Pete Alonso stays on this team, that could be a player in the future. Or Brandon Nimmo. I mean, I like the idea when you talk about retiring players' numbers of homegrown talents. If you're a homegrown talent, we don't know what Alonso's future is going to be, but if you're a homegrown talent that produces, takes your team to a World Series, and finishes your career with the team, then, you know, that's when you start really talking about number retirement territory in my eyes. Maybe the next retired number is the one on the roster right now.
Yeah, never know. But one thing that stuck with me also was that it looked like the entire team was watching, the current team watching the ceremony. And I watched the replay when I got back from the ballpark, and they kept focusing in on Alonso. And you could just think that maybe this does have an impact with him, and whatever the decision is, no one knows until the season is going to be over. Right. But it's such a rarity, because the only one before David, a homegrown guy, was Tom Seaver. And that was, I was there in 88 when Seaver went and took his accolades and bowed to each part of the stadium and Shea Stadium. And that's always something special. So looking at Pete, because he could, this maybe could influence him. For Met fans, you hope, and business is always business. But it was really cool to see even Alonso talking to Soto and Lindor is right there. So I think it made an impression on this current group of Mets players as well. So that was very cool to see.
I think so. Yeah, I think so as well. You know, when I do look at Pete Alonso, I do feel like he probably did everything in his power that he could to stay on this team, obviously within reason. And I've written about this before, but, you know, people call Lindor the de facto captain, and I can see that. But if Lindor is the de facto captain, I feel like Pete Alonso is the team's heartbeat. Yes. And so, like, that's how I view him and his role in the franchise.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. Lindor, the de facto captain, and Pete, certainly the heartbeat, and Soto, the mystery man. he's just an enigma. Getting to the team right now, they are still kind of a club mirrored with glaring issues. The lack of clutch hitting and men in scoring position, starters that can't really go deep in the game, revolving door bullpen that's pretty unsustainable, as everybody knows. But give us a glimpse on, you know, the team's had a rough 30 days. I mean, it really has. Of how, and you're there behind the scenes each and every game, almost each and every game. Give us a glimpse of how the team is handling all this kind of behind the scenes. You know, what's their current mood, if you could share that?
They're a fairly stable team in terms of whenever I go into the clubhouse post game, it doesn't seem like anyone gets too high or too low. And that's probably a good thing right now. That being said, I mean, you do have to be a little bit concerned. I was looking at some of the statistics, and it's just like they have their 677 OPS since like June 13th is the sixth worst in baseball. You take that. And I was also looking at, you know, okay, so what happens to this lineup? And of course, you have the quote unquote, what Steve Cohen called the Fab Four. But when they're not going at the top of the lineup, there's very little much else, because they're getting almost no production from the 5, 6, and 7 spots. It's among the worst in baseball for those three spots. So even though David Stearns, yesterday he spoke to the media, he said that he felt that the lineup was balanced and that the lineup was long, I don't necessarily feel that's the case. I feel like they need a little bit more power. Francisco Lindor has been slumping. basically since the time he broke his toe. So that's one thing. Pete Alonso has been great. Jeff McNeil has very quietly had a fantastic season. Brandon Nimmo has his power stroke. So there are positives here, but there are black holes in the lineup. Tyrone Taylor's defense is otherworldly, truly one of the best defensive center fielders that I've seen in quite some time, but he's not really bringing anything to the plate offensively. And I think he does know that. They got Alvarez back, and Alvarez, you know, he immediately contributed. So if they can get something out of the catcher position, that would be good. And then you have to kind of hope that a guy like Mark Vientos, who has struggled so much, looks a little bit better at the plate of late. So, you know, they say that there are signs, trade deadline is coming up, but there's only so much you can do when your guy's not necessarily hitting in the middle of the lineup. Your starters are going very, very short, even though Sean Manaea and Kodai Senga will probably get stretched out. And the bullpen has been taxed heavily. And aside from Edwin Diaz, there's nobody that's really just like an automatic bullpen arm.
Yeah, it's been that revolving door in the bullpen is just incredible. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, how many 30 plus guys have been used in out of the bullpen this season so far? And, you know, when Carlos Mendoza, you know, what a tough job he's got trying to piece this all together. But I've noticed in the last week and a half in the postgame, press conferences or whatever, he seems to be getting a little bit more testy because he doesn't really have a strong poker face. You know, he's always really honest and such, but I think he's showing some of that frustration. Well, maybe it's kind of a little message, and he knows that David Stearns is going to do everything he can to try to bring some more arms in before this trade deadline.
Yeah, you know, and we kind of saw it, I think it was it the Senga game? It was one game before, but he went with Alex Carrillo, and then he went with Brandon Waddell to finish out the game when the game wasn't out of hand yet. And I asked him about it, and I'm like, is this because it was the Sean Manaea game? So already he knew that the starter was going to be on a pitch count. And I asked him post-game, I'm like, is this because you have Clay Holmes coming up? And even though no one has said Clay Holmes is on any sort of limitation, he's exceeded the number of innings that he's ever pitched in a major league season. So you kind of have to, like, start wondering, you know, about load management a little bit. And then you had Kodai Senga going on Monday, and everybody knew that that was going to be a limited pitch count as well. So did you have to go with Carrillo and Waddell because you're saving other arms? And that's the chess match that he has to play. He has to play the game of, do we kind of like let this one go so we can win the next two or three or whatever else? And that's not a position any manager wants to be in. We did see Dave Roberts and the Dodgers do this successfully, even in the playoffs last year. There were certain games where I was like, are they punting this? How is this going to work? But it worked out for them. But I don't know if, you know, this again, as good as this team is, this is also a team that made the playoffs by just one game last year. So every game, as cliche as it is, every game does matter.
Yeah. No one wants to hear the term punt, you know, but when you looked at that game that you were referring to, that was the impression that so many people got from that. And I think that's where Carlos even got a little testy, because obviously those moves that were made in that particular game were very, you know, a lot of people questioned them. So, good reporting too with those questions and with everyone else, but you could see he was getting a little testy. On the other side, you know, David spoke to the media yesterday and he was kind of saying, you know, he wasn't giving any clues at all, except for going after bullpen arms. So who knows what's up his sleeve? But you know, if you look at the team, there's got to be moves made on the bullpen. I don't know if a starting pitcher, because Senga didn't, you know, he didn't do well. I mean, it's like something has got to give. And so I don't know if there's a big move that he's kind of talking to other teams about. But on the offensive side, with these three kids, you know, you're talking about Mauricio, Beatty, Vientos, Acuna, the four of them. Is there could there be a sense even in the clubhouse right now where these guys are getting a little nervous, like one or two could be gone in a week and a half?
It's certainly possible. I mean, when you're looking at, you're talking about getting bullpen help. Every team that's in the playoff hunt is going to be looking for some sort of bullpen help. That's usually the biggest moves that happen at the trade deadline because they are so valuable down the stretch. So these guys are going to be going for at a premium. One of the ramifications of the expanded playoffs is just logically there are going to be fewer sellers. And when there are fewer sellers, it means that the teams that are selling kind of hold a lot of the cards. And when that happens, you have to think, I mean, all right, can we let go of one of these kids for what might be a rental? And also, I mean, when you look at pitchers tend to get hurt. So there is a lot of just kind of like trying to weigh the costs and what will make this team. You want someone who will ideally be the factor that gets you into the playoffs and far into the playoffs. But how can you predict that? He's also said, you know, like, he does not necessarily make moves for the splash factor. So maybe that's him insinuating that, sure, he'll make a couple of minor moves, or not minor, but smaller moves like he did at last trade deadline. But maybe don't expect, you know, the Eugenio Suarez at third base sort of situation, because he's probably going to be the most coveted of anybody available at the trade deadline if the Diamondbacks do decide to go that route. So it might be smaller moves, smaller bullpen moves, but even maybe like don't expect Manuel Class A or like a high leverage reliever like that, even though I do think they need that high leverage arm. I keep going back to, we keep forgetting that AJ Minter was supposed to be part of this team because he got hurt so early on. But that was a huge blow to this bullpen. I kind of changed kind of the fabric of this season, I think, in more ways than people probably realize.
Yeah. I wish they would have brought David Robertson back. I mean, the Phillies went and got him. You know, everyone was saying how well he was throwing and he had these open tryouts. And I was like, here's a guy that did really well. And then he got traded in the middle of that collapse a few years back. And he's been sitting out there all season, like doing nothing, just keeping in shape. And then the Phillies went and grabbed him. I hope that doesn't bite the Mets down the road, because Robertson, I still think, has a lot of gas in the tank. You know,
I think so. I think one of the reasons Robertson wasn't on a team is because Robertson didn't necessarily want to be on a team. It was more like, I want the right situation for me and my family. Yeah. Because he's at that point in his career where he doesn't need to play just to play. No. He could be on the golf course right now. He's fine.
That's right. Yeah, he's a great pitcher, great veteran, and he's played for that team before, Philadelphia. When you look at Alvarez, him coming back, and the fans gave him such a big ovation last night, a big standing ovation, so that had to make him feel good. And he's been tearing it up in the minor leagues. He is kind of the missing piece, I think. I think that position and his offense, I think that if he can get going, and Beatty showing signs of life again, and I think if these young and they're the ones that have been performing the last few games is the lower part of the lineup and not the Fab Four. So I think Alvarez, and I'd like to get your opinion on this as well. Could he be kind of like this catalyst? If he gets going, he could also help carry a team, because he's done it in the past when he was a rookie.
I 100% believe this. If they get the Francisco Alvarez that we saw his rookie season, I think the Mets are in a much, much better position. You know, people always kind of poo-pooed his defense, and yes, his defense regressed a lot this year, but it was way better than people said it was when he first came into the major league. So if he can get back to where he was last year defensively, and then also bring that power swing, this is a real impact bat. He had 11 home runs in 19 minor league games. Granted, AAA pitching, not major league pitching, completely different story. But, you know, like the mixture of changing his swing mechanics, which I think has been written about a lot in the offseason, and then the hamate injury and maybe not getting the reps that he needed, it didn't do him any favors. It seems to me, from what David Stearns was saying yesterday, is that Alvarez has kind of returned to more of the swing mechanics that he had previously. In addition to that, he's worked on his receiving and his blocking. If that can translate to power, because, you know, like if he could pull the ball in the air, power to all fields like he has, if he can be that sort of player one more time, that's a huge weapon. I hate to be the person who's like, oh, you know, it's almost like an acquisition at the trade deadline, but it's kind of almost like an acquisition at the trade deadline.
It is. Who's the hitting coach down up in Syracuse? Do you know who's been working with
him? I don't know off the top of my head, unfortunately, but I know like Dickie Scott, the manager there, has been doing a lot of good work, a lot of good work with the players. And Mendoza, don't underestimate how much of an impact Mendoza has, because again, this is a manager who started in player development. And so he is very intent and is very knowledgeable when it comes to developing young players, not only in terms of their skill level, but psychologically. And I think that's one thing that impressed everybody about Alvarez is the fact that he could have gone down there and been like, I've been in the major leagues a long time. This is a huge blow. He just had a kid. You know, that's a lot of pressure on a young player and then to be sent to the minor leagues. And instead he was like, all right, let's get to work. Let's get to work. He didn't even wait the 72 hours that players are allowed before they have to report. He was there. He was ready. He wasn't moping. And that speaks a lot to his character.
Yeah, it's a good sign for sure. And of course, we now have just 60 something games left in the season. So Mets right in the thick of things still. But who knows what happens at the rest of the season. But at least we know that if things start to click, you know, it's going to be an exciting second half. Lauren, we certainly appreciate you coming on our show and coming back as often as you do. So we look forward to talking to you again. But before you go, please let everybody know, you know, where they could find you on social media, where they could read about you know, these great columns that you write and the great coverage you give to the Mets, and also your fabulous quirky podcast.
It is very quirky. So you can read my stuff at newsday.com/Mets. That's all of our coverage over there. You can find me on X at Albanese Laura, on Instagram at Laura Write Stuff, and my sports and pop culture podcast, in which we talk all sorts of nonsense, is first time listener, long time caller.
Lots of Simpsons talk on that show.
A lot of Simpsons. We just had a Simpsons writer and producer on, which is kind of fun.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, as always, for coming on the Terry Collins Show, Laura.
Thank you so much for having me.
Always great to have Laura Albanese with us here at the Terry Collins Show. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation never stops its mission to help our greatest heroes, and this week is certainly no exception. Former Major League ballplayer Wally Joyner is hosting a celebrity golf tournament for the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, and you're invited. Wally will be playing in Newport Beach, California on Monday, July 28th. He's hosted similar events in the past, drawing former professional athletes, actors, and all kinds of celebrities. All proceeds from this golf benefit will also help the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. For more information, go to t2t.org. And three wounded service members are the latest recipients of specially adapted mortgage-free smart homes courtesy of the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. On July the 16th, Tunnel to Towers honored the service of Air Force Master Sergeant Sean Mullins, Army Specialist Stephen Maxwell, and Army Private First Class Charlie Figueroa. All of these homes are in the Foundation's Let Us Do Good Village in Florida. And if any service member or first responder is catastrophically injured, T2T will provide them with a mortgage-free home to suit their individual needs. To learn more about that program, go to t2t.org. And when a first responder is killed in the line of duty and has young children, Tunnel to Towers helps their family pick up the pieces. Last month, two Idaho firefighters were murdered by an arsonist who started a wildfire. In a matter of days, the foundation stepped in to pay off the family's mortgages. Since its inception, Tunnel to Towers has now delivered more than 1,500 mortgage-free homes. You can help change lives by donating just $11 a month. You can also give a car or any land. Go to t2t.org. That's t2t.org. Well, getting back to Saturday, it was one of the most special days in Mets history this past week when the team honored its former captain, David Wright, the only player to have his number retired who played his entire career with New York. We captured many moments from this past weekend, and our creative director, Marsh, put together a fabulous look back at this weekend, which we're going to share with you right here after this word from David Wright on behalf of Tunnel to Towers.
I'm David Wright, former New York Mets third baseman, and I support the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. I've seen firsthand the great work they do helping our firefighters, our police, and our soldiers and their families. T2T is asking for your support for these brave men and women. Just $11 a month will go a long way and make a big difference. Go to t2t.org to find out more. Let's go Mets, and let's do good together.
Rated T for Teen.
Each year, thousands of adults lose their shred. It's an epidemic simply known as shred loss. But it doesn't have to be this way. Because rekindling your shred is as easy as playing the new Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4. With new parks, cross-platform multiplayer, and sick new game modes, we can put an end to shred loss everywhere. Get the new Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4 and show the world that the shred's not dead. Get Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4 available now.
The sights and sounds of this past Saturday, which is a day I'll never forget. I was able to get on the field, had those media credentials, had my nephew Dominic with me, and it was certainly a day that I never really quite felt with all the love at Citi Field for David Wright. And like I said, I'll never forget it. And I want to remind everybody also, I mean, this video is really, you got to go to our YouTube channel first and foremost if you want to see it. And, you know, for those of you listening on your podcast platforms, yeah, it's great. But to capture it, go to our YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/ The Terry Collins Show. Check it out there and like it. Subscribe to the channel because we're always putting up some great content there for you. Well, another all-time memory in Mets history was July of 2015, and when this pivotal month turned the team around as they went all the way to the World Series that year. And right now we're going to take a look back at that month with SNY's Andy Martino and our own Terry Collins. So let's go to that video right now. Each and every month, we go over what happened 10 years ago. It's the 10-year anniversary of the 2015 National League champion New York Mets. And joining us to reminisce about July of 2015, 10 years ago, with Terry Collins, we're here with Andy Martino. Andy, welcome back, and we appreciate you participating in this look back at July of 2015.
My pleasure. These are fun memories. That was quite a season. It's just as surprised as anybody on that run you guys went on, Terry, but couldn't have been happier for anybody as I was for you that you finally got the team that you deserved all those years after you were overperforming on teams that weren't probably designed to win. Here you were with an okay team, and you took them all the way to the end of October. It was amazing.
You know, Andy, I will tell you, after the 2015 season was over, and I don't know when it was, if it was – spring training, I went, but I had Sandy Alderson on last year during the podcast. Mm-hmm. But you know, I asked him one time about, so what was it going into July? Because we had just come out of a bad June. What was it going into July that you said, you know what, I'm going to make some moves and we're going to get this team better because I believe in what we've got. And of course, it all started with that young pitching. You know, we knew we had some young pitching, and we our bullpen was a little short. Andy said Sandy told me we had to shore up that bullpen, and he went out and got two of the best relievers in the game. And the attitude even the guys that they replaced. You know, he had to send some guys down, but everybody in that clubhouse all of a sudden said, "Hey, that the front office, they think we can win this thing." And it changed the entire atmosphere every day in that clubhouse. And that's the biggest thing I remember about July. And every time there was a name being mentioned in a trade, we thought we were going to get them. Mm-hmm. And then of course you got, you know, your coaching staff saying, "Hey, I hear we got a chance to get so-and-so." And Sandy, he'd come up with another Kelly Johnson, or he'd come up with Juan Uribe. Now these are good big league players that we're bringing in to just fill holes, you know? And that's why I said, you know, there was a time in really, probably after we got Cespedes, but I look down that bench and I'm thinking to myself, the other team's manager, he's in trouble because mm-hmm. I got something for him. No matter who he brings in, no matter what the situation is, I got a quality big league player that I'm going to run up there in that situation. And that's not a good feeling when you're on the other side of the field, knowing that, hey, mm-hmm. look, I got nothing. This guy's got, he's got me beaten. And, you know, I used to think about that with the Yankees. I used to tease Joe Torre about, you know, when they had that big year. And I said, my God, you sit over there and you look down the bench and, you know, we got Wade Boggs sitting on the bench. What the heck is going on here? Well, now all of a sudden I'm doing that. I'm looking down that bench and I'm seeing what I got thinking, I kind of like my chances tonight. And when that confidence is there, those players feed off it. And I think that's what really those guys actually believed they couldn't get beat. Mm-hmm.
That final week of July, it was so historic. They made a documentary out of it. Mm-hmm. Andy, as a younger reporter back then, and Terry, of course, being in the dugout, it was a roller coaster ride. And that last week of July, there were so many pivotal things that happened. So why don't you take us through that whole week, what you remember and how pivotal it was for the franchise, because there was everything that week.
What was the sequence of events, Terry? Did the rain delay game against the Padres come before the Wilmer crying night? Do you remember? Right.
I do believe it did.
So that was, it was so many intense days in a row. It's hard to imagine. What I remember personally, I have a pretty direct experience with you. If you guys could bear with me for like a 2 minute story here. It was like I remember arriving in the ballpark the night of the Wilmer trade that didn't obviously go through, driving into my parking spot in lot G at Citi Field, and getting a text from a source hearing like there's something big was brewing. There was a trade that was going to happen probably that day, that night during the game. And so you go into it's go time for a reporter. You're trying to figure out what it was. And over the first maybe few innings of the game, I was able to find out that the Mets had agreed to trade Wilmer Flores and Zach Wheeler for Carlos Gomez, to go, sending those two guys to Milwaukee. That trade had been agreed to. So you're thinking, all right, that's a big trade. At the time, Gomez was a star-level player and a guy who homegrown Mets. So that was going to be an exciting one for the Mets to deliver to their fans. And remember, Wheeler was out that year, so there was no pain in giving him up the way it was viewed at that time. And Flores is a good young player, but I can't say anyone knew the amazing career that he'd have. The fact that he's in the league 10 years later, amazing. At the time, all right, if you got to give up Wilmer Flores to get a star, you'll do it. So that was the trade. As the game went on, I was confident enough in my sourcing on that I reported it, that those names were the trade. Right around that time, Joel Sherman from the Post, a competitor, reports the same. So it's out there. So I don't know whether it was my tweet or Joel's tweet that the fans showed to Wilmer when he was on deck, but it had to have been one of the two. And we see the tears. We see the whole thing. Terry knows this part firsthand. Obviously, I don't. But I remember hearing you saying David came to you in the dugout and said, Wilmer's crying. You got to get him out of the game.
First, he said, Wilmer's been traded. And he said, Terry, it's all over TV that he has been traded. I said, David, he has not been traded. He said, I'm just telling you that it's out. It's been reported. This deal's done. And that's when I told him, I turned to the phone. I said, you see that phone right there? That goes up to the general manager's box. And if Wilmer Flores was traded, that phone would be ringing right now because they're going to make me take him out of the lineup. So the next thing I get is David saying, hey, Wilmer's crying. I said, what? So he comes off the field and I take him down in the little runway next to dugout. I said, are you okay? And he said, well, I'm really upset that I got traded. I said, you haven't been traded. There's no deal. Until there's a deal, pal, you got to play. You got to get yourself to pull yourself together. And so he goes back out. And, of course, the fans are yelling, cheering for him. And, well, we're going to miss you, Wilmer. Now he starts crying even more. Now the phone rings. And it's Sandy. Mm-hmm. And I said, I answered the phone. He said, you got to take Wilmer out. I said, did we trade him? He said, no, but he's crying on the field. You got to get him out of there. I said, oh, my goodness gracious.
Okay, so
yeah.
He started
it. Now I know where it started.
That's right. And I was right. As you know, he did trade him. But I will tell you, so the view up in the press box is getting a little nervous that he's not coming out of the game during the intervening time that you're talking about. Because it's like, well, I reported this. I put it out there. I'm confident. It's true. But why the hell is he still in the game? There's got to be some hitch here. Well, it's going on for too long. And he didn't, as you said, Terry, Sandy didn't even take him out of the game because the trade was done. He took him out because you can't have a poor young man weeping on the field.
That's right.
It doesn't work. It's baseball's hard enough when you're not crying, right?
Yeah.
So you remember that Tom Hanks scene, there's no crying in baseball? That was you that night. Pull it together, man. So anyway, it's a mess. But I knew, and I checked back in with my sources, you know, no, they agreed to this. And then Carlos Gomez during the game took a picture on social media with his Brewers teammates on the team plane where he was like saying goodbye. So all this stuff, that the wheels are in motion, all this stuff, unbeknownst to me yet, the Mets are having trouble with his medicals and not comfortable with his hip. So that's what Sandy meant. Technically, of course, the trade wasn't done, but they'd agreed on the players. Then comes the medicals and doesn't work. I didn't know this yet. So now, Terry, I remember your press conference, which is one of those moments of yours that stood the test of time where you go, trade it to who for what? And I was supposed to do an appearance with SNY in the post game to talk about the trade right after you were done. So I'm standing there with a mic in the back of the press conference room, and you're vehemently saying that there's no trade. And I'm going, well, what the hell is he talking about? There is a trade. And I know he's the manager, but there was a trade. And so I think I basically go on TV going, I love Terry, but I don't know what he's saying. I've been told there's a trade, but there must be something that we have to figure out here. I was told the Daily News at the time, our back page was all about this trade. It's 11:30 at night. They've got it all set. So media goes into the clubhouse. Sandy's doing an impromptu press conference in the clubhouse. He says, there is no deal. There will be no deal. And I'm going, oh, my God. What? I got to call the office and tell them there's no deal. And the problem with newspaper deadlines is that was the back page. So wipe out the back page, wipe out the stories. Bill Madden wrote a column, wipe it all out, start from scratch, 11:30 at night. So now we have to figure out why the trade didn't happen, because you need a new story. The new story is now, why did it fall through? And my last memory of that night is being in my kitchen in my apartment in Brooklyn that we lived in at the time. We had a baby, so I couldn't really talk when I came back in the house in the middle of the night. But Scott Boras is screaming at me about how the Mets are making too big a deal out of Carlos's hip and it should be fine and da-da-da. And that was how the day ended. And obviously, the trade didn't go through. And we could look back now. It was a disappointment, but we remember that next morning, right, when Leland called you and said, hey, what about Cespedes? And the rest is history. And it turned out to be a much better acquisition than Cargo would have been. So there you go. What a story, though, right?
Yeah. I said it many times, and, you know, there could be a sports movie about that week.
Yeah.
And I know they did a documentary, but, you know, all those moves and, you know, the emotions involved and not just with Wilmer, but the other guys on the team, you know, they loved Wilmer. And then then when he hits the home run 2 days later, my God, I mean, what a story. What a month.
And good for Wilmer, too, because as I said before, first of all, the fact that he's got more than 10 years of service is amazing for anybody. And not to say he's not good enough, just to say that, like, just what that says about how much better he was than we even could have imagined and the ability to stick. And that moment, I remember I was there, of course, at the press box, and that ball cleared the wall to win the game. And what was that like in the dugout? That's a typical question that gets asked. But in this one, like, really, that must have been amazing in the dugout when that ball cleared the wall.
I mean, you saw the guys, they went jumping over the rails. And I mean, it was crazy. Yeah. And you know, and you're sitting there, and of course, one of the thoughts goes through your head, like, of course it is going to be him to hit the, you know, to win that game and started the roll. I mean, that started the whole, you know, the next two nights later, we win the series and, you know, never look back. And that all started with the fact that, you know, not only that he didn't get traded, but that big home run. So huge, huge end of that end of July for us.
Yeah.
It was a pivotal week for sure. One of the most pivotal in the history of the New York Mets. And it had a very happy ending. And thank you guys for reminiscing about that week and some stories that we may have not heard of before. But thank you again. So we'll reminisce again in August about August 2015.
Great pleasure.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you very much, Andy. Thank you. One of the most memorable months ever, July 2015, for the New York Mets. Well, this week we debut a new Tunnel to Tower story featuring TTT founder Frank Siller and the one and only Sylvester Stallone, another huge name aligning with TTT. So let's take a look at that video with Frank Siller and Rocky himself, Sylvester Stallone.
Wow. Lo and behold.
I know that walk anywhere.
Welcome to the set of Tulsa Steve. Thank you. Privilege to see you here.
Oh my gosh, what a treat.
Likewise.
Can't thank you enough for being here on your set. My goodness.
Welcome to the bar at Tulsa Key.
You know, when I first met you, you said to me that you wanted to help out.
Whenever we can take our ability to bring focus onto what your cause is, it's an honor to be chosen to do this for you.
What draws you to help our American heroes?
The least we can do, or people that have the means, is contribute to these incredible people that don't get any recognition at all, but they're the real heroes. We're kind of movie heroes. They make us. We're fictional. They're real.
If any first responder or Gold Star widow has someone die in the line of duty and they leave a young family behind, we pay every mortgage off in America.
Which is such a humane thing to do, to take care of the people that have taken care of us.
Exactly. It's simple.
It's really simple math.
This coming year, we're building a special 100 smart homes for the catastrophically injured service members and first responders.
It's stuff that you take for granted that they can't do, and now they can.
And over the last 2 years, we've taken over 10,000 homeless veterans off the streets. We get them all the comprehensive services they need to assimilate back into society.
Every one of them deserves a home and to feel safe, considering what they've contributed to this country's safety and future.
People know that when they make a donation, their money is gonna go to these heroes.
True. It's like guaranteed in the bank. And everyone, this is money well spent, and you know exactly where it's going into these people's lives.
Well, thank you very much.
And keep punching.
Thank you. God bless.
I'm Sylvester Stallone. Please donate $11 a month at T2T.org.
We really love bringing you these stories each and every week on the show. And boy, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, there's so many celebrities and ball players that are aligning themselves with the foundation. And it's all for a great cause. And we're so happy to have them here with us each and every week on the show. Before we go today, we want to remind you to check out Amazing Conversations with Jay Horowitz, a New York Mets podcast hosted by the foremost Mets historian. Each week, Jay brings on guests from all eras in Mets history. And this week is another good one. Jay welcomes Daniel Murphy, who shares personal and powerful stories about David Wright's career and that number retirement ceremony. Amazing Conversations with Jay Horowitz, available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube. We want to invite you to subscribe to The Terry Collins Show on your favorite podcast platform, whether it's Spotify, Apple, Odyssey, iHeart. So go there and subscribe to the show, and please give it a like and a good review. We certainly would appreciate that. Or go to our YouTube channel as well, and go to youtube.com/ Terry Collins Show. Our entire archive, so the past two seasons are available there. We have six shorts that we put up each and every week of highlights from past interviews, from the current show. There are now over 200 videos on the Terry Collins Show archives at the YouTube channel. So please go there and make sure to subscribe to that channel right there. And that's going to wrap up another edition of the show. Thanks to our creative director, Marsh, and our researcher, Dominic DiBiase. For Terry Collins, this is John Arezzi. We'll see you next time.